Okay, I love that segue, Disney, to Jimi Hendrix, of course, playing his version of All Along the Watchtower. It was the big hit for Jimi, but of course it was a Bob Dylan song.
There must be some way out of here, say the joker to the thief. There's too much confusion, I can't get no relief.
Like both versions, Ross, our guest today says Jimi Hendrix covered the song partly because he loved Bob Dylan, but he also detects notes of resistance in the Hendrix version, and those notes reveal a lot about Jimi Hendrix, about race relations in post-war America, and about the history of Seattle. Hendrix was born and raised here.
Peter Bacon Hales wrote a chapter on Jimi Hendrix in his new book called Outside the Gates of Eden, The Dream of America from Hiroshima to Now. Hales told David Hyde that Hendrix almost didn't pick All Along the Watchtower.
His girlfriend reported later that he had looked at some other songs on the album, partly because he was terrified that All Along the Watchtower was too demanding and ambitious a Dylan song, that he couldn't remake it as his own. And that was really what he wanted to do. He wanted to take a Dylan song and completely rewrite it into his own dream or his own style. But most appropriately, All Along the Watchtower, because it is based in a deeply American religious context. It's a very Old Testament song about ingratitude in the face of a possibly wrathful God, and everything waits for the wrath of God to appear. And in the Dylan song, it was quite quiet, quite meditative, and Hendrix, who in Seattle had been raised in a Pentecostal environment with a lot of that sort of very emotionalist religiosity and a lot of that very religious music, he thought to come back to that. So he starts off working by himself. Then he brings in various musicians, including the guitarist from Traffic, Dave Mason, who plays the 12-string guitar part, and others. Then he brought it back to New York to record there, and then he starts to bring in the experience, and he's too perfectionist for them, and they sort of storm out, and he ended up recording the bass part himself, and then just layers and layers and layers and layers it. To listen to it now on a set of headphones, if you're really careful, you can start to hear just how many layers of work he put into it.
And one of the things that you emphasize in the book, in your interpretation of the Dylan song, he wants to make this Dylan song his own. And one of the ways he does that is through the vocals. What's your take of his vocalization of that song?
One of the things that Dylan had done with much of his music was take black indigenous music and, you could say, white French existentialist it up, you know, meaning he always talks about Verlaine and Rimbaud, the white symbolist poets, but he also was very, very much, his discourse was around people like Sartre and Camus and that sort of absurdist existentialist stuff. What Hendrix was interested in was going the other way, taking that kind of absurdist existentialist theme of Dylan's and making the song black again, meaning reinserting into it a much deeper sense of a wrathful God, of a vengeful world, of ungrateful sinners, all of these sorts of thematics that he had grown up in the Pentecostal church with. So what he does with one of the things he does with the vocals is he blacks them up. That is, Dylan says, there must be some way out of here, said the Joker to the priest. And Hendrix says, there must be some kind of way out of here, say the Joker to the priest.
There must be some kind of way out of here, say the Joker to the thief.
So he does those classics where he takes the tense and the tense of the verb and modifies it, those sorts of things. And what's interesting about that is if you listen to or read Hendrix's own lyrics, the ones he wrote himself, like The Wind Cries Mary and so on, you realize that he's capable of almost Elizabethan precision in his use of traditional Anglican English. His grammar can be absolutely perfect. So when he chooses to diverge from it, it's for very specific reasons, often for irony or for satire or sardonicism. You know, there's a line about click bang, what a hang, your daddy just shot poor me, for example, in the first album. And those sorts of very funny uses of language. And in All Along the Watchtower, he instead uses his voice as much more of a Pentecostal preacher's voice.
We're talking to cultural historian, writer, and musician Peter Bacon Hales. He's telling us about one of Seattle's biggest exports from the 1960s. It's Jimi Hendrix, and the song in particular, All Along the Watchtower, and what it reveals about post-war American culture and history. And what was Hendrix's personal experience with race that you see being revealed here?
I think of him as one of the most important figures in the race relations, particularly cultural race relations, of the early to middle counterculture years. He's in Seattle. He went to one of the few integrated high schools in the United States at that time. Actually went through high school in an integrated environment. He then volunteered for the paratroopers, and then his experiences as a musician find him often in real conflict, either with black music because he's deemed as too white or too integrationist or too flamboyant, or in white circles, there's just an inherent nervousness about having a black guitar player in a white band. But he was such a great musician, and also just from every report, a person capable of almost infinite grace and charm and diffidence and attentiveness to others, that it was very hard not to be brought into his charmed circle. So he ended up playing with just an immense array of different kinds of bands. He played with an all-white Jersey soul guy whose most famous song was Peppermint Twist.
Got a new dance and it go like this. Pop-shoo-ba, pop-a-pop-a-shoo-ba. Yeah, the name of the dance is the Peppermint Twist. Pop-shoo-ba, pop-a-pop-a-shoo-ba.
And they would play all-white segregated dates, and Hendrix... We still don't know where Hendrix would sleep, because he was not allowed to sleep in the hotels. He probably slept on the bus while everybody else was in the hotel. And he also played with a lot of wild black bands. So he had this very telling relationship to America's uncomfortableness with race, not only with himself as he wandered through. He's got that great line about white-collar professional walking down the street, and he says, you know, I'm going to wave my freak flag high, high. And for Hendrix, one solution to the problem of race in America was to imagine a transracial or post-racial utopia, which he imagined the counterculture could be. And he very much tried to present that as a viable alternative to the racial politics of very troubled racial politics of the mid and late 60s, when the riots were occurring and when there was a real retrenchment.
So there's this countercultural resistance that's present in a lot of his lyrics and a lot of his performances and his work. What about his politics? Was he political at all?
He had been upbraided by black nationalists and more radicalized African Americans for his unwillingness to take a much more strident political stance. But his position was one that was characteristic of the counterculture, which was the secessionist model. His idea was that you could not, in fact, reform mainstream American culture, that that racism and income inequity and greed and corporate power over the media, that those were insurmountable from any kind of reform standpoint. And really the only way to do it was to secede. And so most of his lyrics and most of his dogma, the evangelical preaching of a kind of secession into the counterculture.
There must be some kind of way out of here. Say the joker to the thief. There's too much confusion.
I can't get no relief. Businessman there, drink my wine. Plowman, dig my earth. None will level on the mine. Nobody of it is worth.
I say any excuse to play Jimi Hendrix is a good day. That is Jimmy's cover of Bob Dylan's song All Along the Watchtower. And if you read chapter 13 of Peter Bacon Hale's book Outside the Gates of Eden, you'll find out why Jimi Hendrix covered the tune. Cultural historian, musician, and writer Peter Bacon Hale spoke with our colleague David Hyde here on the record on KUOW.